the trade.
Seamus, I've actually got a different intro for that. I think I just played the wrong one.
Did Big Hungry make that intro?
Let's try this one. They all look the same. See if this one's any different. Okay, bear with me.
Go with it.
It's time for Tools of the Trade.
Same. Brought to you by Heat Pump Cleaning Specialists.
Mm-hmm. Cleaning or heating?
Well, I guess you're heating your home, but you got to keep it clean, don't you? People sort of forget that a heat pump has got a massive filter on it.
Mm.
So it's important, I guess, that you just give it a zhuzh up every once in a while.
My room gets hella dusty.
Why is that?
I don't know. I've researched it and I can never figure it out. It's on Dominion Road. Maybe it's because it's near a main road.
That's probably quite true. Is it like a sort of a black sort of grime that floats in the window?
Maybe it's just, I think it might also be because now I use a dryer all the time and then I just...
Indoors? Is it vented?
My dryer?
Yes. Does it vent into the house?
Has the big tube out the back where you just put out the window when we use it. But the vent sucks, eh? It's such a dusty dryer, so it's probably
Is everyone living in the same room? Like the kitchen, like a whole lot of bunk beds.
not anymore.
A dryer? Everyone uses the dryer as a dining room table kind of thing? No?
No.
Okay. Hey, welcome, Seamus. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So for this Tools of the Trade segment, what on earth have we brought in?
This here is, if you can see by this little label on this, it's a keyboard. It's a synthesizer. It's called the Roland SH-101.
Mm-hmm.
This is a synthesizer, I think, that came out in 1984.
Yes.
And since then has been iconic, both in terms of its sound and in terms of its use and in terms of... just its functionality. It was so popular because it's so laid out and it's so easy to understand what you're doing in terms of synthesizing sounds that even someone who's not a musician, I think, could figure it out pretty quickly.
I'm going to ask some stupid questions. Is there any reason why Roland is sort of like one of the main brands or one of the, like, the big names of synthesis?
I think it's a mix of... So for those who don't know at home... Mm-hmm. Roland is a Japanese synthesizer company established in the 70s, and it's kind of famous for a drum machine such as the TR-808, which by the sounds of it, the drums going in the background of this bit would be the 808.
I think so.
The 909, which is another drum machine that was very, very popular. The TB-303, which is kind of a bass synthesizer that's got a very iconic sound. The 101. They just kind of had a lot of whole range of kind of really good quality stuff and really good consumer-based stuff, which the SH-101 was the first, I think, that was kind of aimed at the consumer market.
This is kind of a compact size. Like, it's sort of a mid-size. It's not like a full sort of piano type thing.
And comparatively, it's... you know, if you look at synthesizers that came out before this, they were all quite big in terms of the actual electronics underneath. This is the first time where kind of digital controls and kind of microprocessing could actually be utilized in a way that was functional for the everyday user.
Is this something that you've seen on Trade Me and you've got, I gotta have that thing?
Well, yeah, I mean, I got this one off Trade Me it was in the wrong category and there was no photo and no description. And it was going for quite cheap, and the guy didn't get in contact with me for about 2 weeks, so I thought it was just some weirdo that just put it on for shits and giggles. But actually, it's in really good condition considering it came out in 84. And another thing is that so Roland has recently kind of, there's so much demand for these and so much demand for old technology that a lot of synthesizer companies have started recreating in the 21st century. One way or another, kind of reissuing these these bits of equipment. So there's so much of a demand for it that people, that these companies actually realize that they can put them out again and people will
pay line top up. Dollar,
yeah,
sell out of them and
yeah. So there's all these videos of comparing the old synthesizers with the new ones and seeing how they stack up.
Do you find yourself going down the internet rabbit hole, coming to and going, oh, I've just been watching comparative videos of old versus new synthesizer for the last 6 hours?
It doesn't stop. It's the last like 5 years of my life. Yeah.
Cool.
Should I make some sound?
Yeah, have a rip on it. Talk me through what exactly you're doing.
So do you know anything about how a synthesizer makes sound?
No.
Okay. That's a good starting point. Let's start like this and let's see what we... Are we hearing anything?
Oh, hang on. I got to give you some of this, don't I?
Yeah. Let me turn myself up a little bit. Is that good for you?
Yeah, it's good for me.
Hopefully it's good for the folks at home. So the basics of a synthesizer, there's a few different... So a synthesizer is kind of a vague term because it just means to create, you're kind of creating the sound. And there's lots of different ways you can do that. But the most kind of... When you think of a synthesizer, it's the way this is laid out. So you have a sound source that's very rich in harmonics and kind of the raw content is very harsh. And then you kind of filter out the high end... and that kind of shapes the sound over time, and then you also control how loud it is over time as well. So you start off with quite a harsh, though it sounds quite, maybe just my headphones are filtering it a bit. So you kind of a buzzy, that's called a sawtooth. There's also a square wave, which is, they just called that based on, if you looked at them, if you recorded it and then zoomed in to see what the shape of the wave was.
Yes.
One would be a square wave where it's kind of on and then off. Mm-hmm. It's kind of very straight and very square. Mm-hmm. And the other one, it kind of starts at the top and then kind of slides down a ramp and then jumps back up. So that's a sawtooth. So, and they sound different. So this is a sawtooth. This is a square.
I can picture it in my mind. That's
it's funny that it's kind of arbitrary, but once you kind of get familiar with it, you actually almost visualize these shapes in your mind, and you can kind of distinguish between the two. And then we also have something called a sub oscillator, which is just an octave lower that gives it a bit of low end. So that's the square, and then we add in a and it just gives it a bit more oomph, a bit more character, a bit more kind of sustenance. So, and then we don't always want that kind of harsh sound. Often you want, if you're trying to recreate a sound that happens acoustically, like a, like a flute, or that flute doesn't sound that harsh. So you use a filter, which kind of filters out those kind of harsh high frequencies and makes it sound a bit more mellow. And often with when you're creating sounds, how that filter opens and closes over time is important, and how that is kind of plays a part in how the sound is shaped. So we have something called an envelope, which pretty much opens and then closes over time, and you kind of set how it opens and how it closes in terms of its speed, and that can open and close the filter, or it can open and, or can control how loud something is. So say like a flute, if you are playing it, the first instance of that sound might be really loud, and then when you sustain it, it's usually a bit quieter. That that kind of percussive start you want that to be louder than the rest, so you can kind of shape that. So if we listen here, so you can hear how the filter closes over time. If we add this little thing called resonance, which kind of enunciates as it closes.
So you've got basically on the top of the keyboard, you've got, they're not really dials, are they? They're
sliders.
Sliders?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like if you're setting the, if you can visualize what a mix, like a
mixing desk.
A mixing desk, you have a 0 and a 10, you kind of use sliders. And so that's one of the why the SH-101 is so appealing, because it's all laid out in front of you. Mm-hmm. And the 80s had this thing where they decided they didn't want everything laid out in terms of design. They wanted everything to be menus, to be digital menus, because they went from everything being laid out and being electronic in an analog sense, to all of a sudden they have these digital things where they can actually digitally control what they're doing. And so they really jumped on this futuristic thing where there was one dot, one knob, and then some buttons, you know, so like a looked like a calculator. And it was for someone, you have to really know the synthesizer or it was just way too much. So something like this where you can lay it out all, it's laid out and it's all clear as to what each thing does. People really like that.
Now, personally, are you trained in piano at all?
No. So I have kind of taught myself piano over the last 10 or 12 years. Never really learnt anything, you know, I can't read music or anything.
But obviously, so when you play it live, if you're playing live, are you playing like, how do I say this? Are you playing like a distinct song, or are you like hitting notes and just going for like a general vibe, you know, like hitting a...
Well, it depends on the song and it depends what kind of stuff you're doing. Like I was playing in the... I played a couple of shows with the Pleasure Magenta just before Laurie went off to Japan and Korea. And like that, it was kind of a mix. There were some songs where I knew what the, what key it was. And I can kind of translate that. I kind of know enough to be able to translate that into being able to play. And then also some songs had very specific melodies where I kind of just had to learn what I was playing and be able to play it at the right time.
Sweet.
So the thing with the synthesizer is, unlike a like an acoustic piano where unlike the an acoustic piano where all the voices each key can play a different voice, this only has one voice, so you can't play a chord in the same way you can with a piano. So so you kind of treat it like a saxophone or a flute. You know, a saxophone, you can't play more than one note at a time. And so initially people were it took them a bit of a while to realize that they can't press two notes and hear two notes, it can only pick one. So and so the reason why people liked it so much, apart from the fact it sounds so good, and it's one of those things where people compare it a lot with new synths. People say, "Oh, it sounds like a Roland filter, or it sounds like an SH-101, or it kind of has this very iconic sound that when people hear it, you kind of pick up, once you get familiar with it, you can really pick up when people use it. It's quite distinct. And it's just like, you know, it's well built, and you can sequence it. It itself has its own little sequencer, so I can dial something in, and we can have a little listen. Let's see this.
Okay.
So we... That's what I was trying to before, but I wasn't able to.
So
you just have it, you know, just like a, and you can do quite complicated stuff, like if you listen to early IDM or a few electronic artists from the 90s, like Square Pusher or Aphex Twin, they kind of relied on these sequences and these synthesizers for their sound. And it's a mix of the fact that at that time, people felt like digital was the future, and so all these old analog synths, people weren't... there wasn't as much of a high demand for them, so all these musicians who didn't have as much money, they could afford these things. And then that, in turn, created a created an interest in them, because all these people who in the 90s didn't have much money, and so relied on the cheaper end of musical equipment, they made music, and then people listened to it and wanted to know what they used to make it, and then there grew a demand for it, you know? So it's kind of funny how it swells. It
comes back around again.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm just looking at the time.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of songs here. We've got a Boards of Canada tune, and you've also got one from you.
Yeah. So so one from me that has a couple of the bass and the kind of the high-pitched leading one. is both off the SH-101. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to show what you can kind of use with it. They're kind of a bit different, the two songs. The reason why I picked one for myself was because I'm hopefully by the end of next month am launching a record label that kind of focuses on electronic music. Like there's a genre called IDM. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how familiar you are with it, and it's not a very
it's the first time I've heard that term. What is IDM?
Okay, IDM stands for intelligent dance music. Mm-hmm. Which is a bit of a it's not the best term, because it kind of makes out that other forms of dance music aren't intelligent. Mm-hmm. Which I think is wrong. I think another good term is brain dance. It's kind of like it's kind of like dance music, it's electronic music, and it kind of is a bit more textural, a bit more rhythmically sophisticated. Kind of, and it's kind of influenced in acid and early kind of breakbeat and jungle, and kind of a fusion of the two. And it's also quite...
If you were going to name us a few artists that were kind of key in that scene, who would you... What's a good reference point?
Well, there's an album called Richard D. James by Aphex Twin that's I think is a really good example. Also, earlier Square Pusher is quite good. There's so Aphex Twin had a record label in the 90s called Reflex Records, R-E-P-H-L-E-X Records, that has a lot of really good artists. Also, Warp Records initially was the big kind of record label that started, that kind of launched all these IDM musicians. Mm-hmm. And then recently there's a record label called CPU Records that has everything off there is amazing. Mm-hmm. that I think is really good in terms of they're from now, so they're not from the 90s, they're from, you know, 2017, so they really show what kind of direction it's going.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. Hey, so shall we jam your tune?
Yeah, go for it.
If you chuck me that line, and then we can give it a little one more plug, mate. This tune of yours. What's its name, and when's it out, and where can people find it? When?
So this is a track called Up Too Late, and so there's the record label is called Spectic Records, and hopefully this compilation should come out by the end of next month. It's more just waiting on a few financial restraints on my part to get it up and going. But there'll be a compilation coming out and a big, hopefully a big launch party to go with it.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah.